The World Figure Skating Championships are underway in Japan. American Nathan Chan is competing for a second world title. Two American ice dance teams are considered contenders. Alas, the American women's single skaters are not. But oh, the athleticism, the beauty, the sequins. What will they wear? And what would they have worn in the 1800s, skating perhaps to the skater's waltz? Our next guest knows, right down to the undergarments, and let's just say they are at least one reason why female skaters back then did not perform quadruple jumps. Quinn Burgess is an historical costumer. She makes the costumes for Plymouth Plantation, where historical recreators live like the pilgrims. You cannot get them out of character. She also gives talks about historically accurate women's clothing. She's giving one soon in Rhode Island and gave one to us. She brought several outfits in and started by modeling some of that Victorian underwear, tame by today's standards, but scandalously underdressed for the era.
Yes, quite. So I'm standing here right now in my base layers, which are a chemise, which is sort of a shapeless cotton thing near my body, and my corset, which I would never show to people if I was a real true lady in the 19th
century. Of course not. So let's describe, and we're going to have tons of pictures at herenow.org. You made all of this?
I did make everything that I'm wearing. I love history and I love sewing. And so when I can combine those two things and make historical clothing, that's what really brings me joy. So I did make both the chemise and this corset and all the other clothes we'll talk about today.
We have tons of outfits laid on a table here in a room at the station where we've sought some privacy as you stand here half naked. But the corset, how does that feel?
So a corset does feel a little bit, not restrictive, but supportive. So it serves two real purposes. And there are a lot of myths around corsets, so I just want to talk about the two purposes that really are what it's for. One is to provide a smooth foundation for the garments that go on top. So the fitted garments that go on top won't fit right if I don't have the right foundation, and they won't fit smoothly either. And the other reason is the corset is boned. This one is actually boned with steel. So
no whalebone was involved in the making of this corset?
Exactly. Yes. It would have been in the 19th century. Mine does not involve whalebone. But the steels help support the weight of the clothing that goes over them. It helps distribute it evenly around my waist. So it makes it more comfortable to wear historical clothing than if I didn't have my corset on.
Well, this is what I was alluding to. These outfits are so heavy, so women needed, as you said, a foundation, sort of an infrastructure to help hold it up. And that brings us to the skating outfit that you made. And do you mind like putting it on right now for us? And so you're going to don it right now, and we'll see what kind of an effort this is. Start with this gorgeous undercloth. What is this?
This is silk. This is my silk petticoat. It's a luxurious petticoat. It has 8 or 9 yards of silk fabric in it. It has over 15 yards of lace in the ruffles, and it feels like a princess or a queen when you're wearing it.
It's wonderful. You can hear the silk ruffling.
It makes a lovely sound.
Again, you could sell this for a lot of money, but it's a historical recreation, so you slip that on. Do you need a dresser?
Do you need help? I do it all myself, actually, for this particular garment.
And you're tightening the straps around the corset at your waist.
And then I've got my petticoat on.
Beautiful. But over that, as if that weren't enough, this gorgeous cream-colored two-piece skating outfit.
Yes, so this is made of wool, trimmed with faux fur, which was very popular for ice skating outfits. And this also has braid all over it, little braided motifs, which was also popular. It came from military influences and also from sort of colder weather locations around the world, like Russia.
There's braid decoration on the sleeves, but also the clasps are this beautiful braid and toggle fasteners that go down the front as well. So you can put the jacket on.
Yeah, so the jacket does have these very large puff sleeves. The 1890s, especially the middle of the 1890s, was known for huge sleeves. And the fashionable look
came back in the 1980s.
Yes, the fashionable look for ice skating and other sports was the fashionable silhouette of the day. So we're not really making concessions for the fact that we're doing athletic activities in these clothes. So I have very fashionable large sleeves on this outfit.
Beautiful. You've also got this muff. I love in your blog, you actually went with a club that you belong to a
yes.
pond where you all went skating, and some little kids came up to you and said, "What's that swirly thing?"
Yeah, so I have a muff to keep my hands warm, which is also faux fur. It matches the faux fur on the trim of the ensemble, and it's lined in flannel to help me keep my hands nice and warm. I also have a hat to finish off the outfit, because if I was dressed fashionably in the 19th century, I would have needed to have a hat to finish my outfit. So it is really fun that I've been ice skating in this outfit. I actually had no trouble moving around. My feet in the skates had no problem not getting stuck in all my layers of skirts. But I found that trying to lace my boots up tight while wearing a corset was extremely difficult because I couldn't bend over far enough for long enough.
Well, and let's talk about the time. Only 5 years before, 1890, Wyoming became the first state to grant women the right to vote in all elections in the state. The women's suffrage movement had been fighting for this for about a half a century by then. So it was a time of change for women. I mean, that's, you can always see change for women reflected in sports. And you see that here.
You do. This is the, not the first decade in the century that women started to play sports, but it's the first decade where women started to do more sports. So for most of the 19th century, women were pretty sedate, and they weren't encouraged to do outdoor activities or anything that would really get their heart moving. Things like croquet developed earlier, ice skating became popular earlier, like in the 1840s, 50s, 60s. But by the 1890s, you get a lot of new things that women can do. And so it brings them out of the house and allows them to do more athletic activities.
Well, and they have to change their clothing, which brings us to this beautiful camel-colored outfit. This is a cycling outfit?
Yes, because bicycling became a huge craze in the 1890s and really illustrated the freedom that women were developing in terms of some of the things that you just mentioned, as well as the freedom to be able to bike, to go places they hadn't been before, and to even possibly, if they were very daring, wear bifurcated bottoms, so trousers or pants.
Which is what you have here. So the jacket is very fitted, beautiful brown buttons down the front, those big puffy shoulders again. The pants, they're like pantaloons. They're,
yes, they are.
They're split and they're huge.
They are huge. Each leg is about 60 inches wide.
Wow.
The goal was to make pants wide enough that it didn't really look like you were wearing pants. It still looked like a skirt. It wasn't really socially acceptable to just wear your bicycling bloomers around. So a lot of women had other contraptions to hide them. They would wear a skirt, like what I'm wearing with my ice skating ensemble, on top until they were actually on the bike, and then they would take it off and they'd put it on again when they were done.
Well, because cycling could be dangerous in a long skirt,
yes,
you know, they've got these pants, but also these, what are these called?
So these are my gaiters. These are, or bicycling leggings. They cover the bottom part of my leg, so the calf. I would still have my black stockings on, but these would protect my stockings from wear. They would also make sure that I wasn't showing my stockings to the world. So they would keep the mud and dirt off my legs and also help provide a little bit of modesty.
Heaven forfeit.
Yes. And I made these from scratch. They're cotton. They button down the side. So it takes a little bit of time to get into them wearing your corset because you have to put them on after you put on the bloomers.
I got all the trouble they went through.
Yes.
We've got a couple other outfits we want to look at. But why did you want to put together the women in sports outfits?
I just feel transported when I'm able to wear the clothes and do a certain activity in a place where it would have been done. So being able to play croquet on the Boston Common in the clothes that would make sense for a historical period is really quite magical, especially when you can sort of imagine that all the modern people around you are gone.
Well, let's talk about the croquet outfit. A beautiful pale green skirt with some lace on it, full skirt, and again, a puffy-sleeved white blouse and the hat with flowers on it. Just tell us, you this is what you do. You're a researcher, but was it from pictures? How did you know to do it this way?
Yes, so I look at historical images of things that could have been sold in a certain time to look for inspiration. The blouse is based on an advertisement for a blouse from 1904. Sometimes there are fashion plates and other images, paintings that you can look at.
When you say fashion plates, you mean old photographs?
So there's photographs, and fashion plates are actually sort of drawings that would have gone into a fashionable magazine. So the skirt is taken from things like fashion plates in terms of where the trim is located, the lace trim. And then the hat is also taken from fashion plates for the silhouette of the hat as well as the trim that's on top of it.
Well, we got to just quickly look at the bathing suits. Oh my goodness, they look so uncomfortable. One of them, is this a wool?
Yeah, so by the 1920s, this bathing suit is 1925.
And let's describe it. It's a dark green.
It is.
It's got a little, like, it's almost like a skort,
yes,
over shorts.
Yeah. So it has built-in shorts for a little bit of modesty. It's like a long tank top, basically. It comes down just below your backside. And it's made of wool jersey, which is what you could have found it for a swimsuit in 1925.
And you could drown when it gets wet. It's so heavy.
You get saggy when they get wet.
And this illustrated what happening for women?
So by the 1920s, we have changed a lot. We're no longer with hemlines at the ankles. We're at the knee. We've had World War I, which changed a lot of worldviews. Women have gained a lot of rights in the last 20, 25 years. So the clothing has changed for women. We're no longer wearing corsets. We've freed up in terms of our undergarments. Our dresses are much less in terms of the layers and the length. And in terms of the sportswear, the swimsuit is sort of the first one that illustrates something where the movement was taken into account before the fashionable silhouette.
For the first time, women were allowed to just care more about the physical activity than how they looked.
Exactly.
You feel history pass over your body because we're at the end of a long table. We started with this skating outfit from 1895, beautiful. We end up down here with a bathing suit from 1920. I mean, you can feel history.
You can.
I can't imagine how much fun you must have at home with all of these outfits that you've made.
I do. I have a lot of fun. I enjoy the process of making them. I enjoy the process of researching them. And I enjoy the process of wearing them. And when I can combine all those things, it really brings history to life in a new way for me than just being able to do one of those particular activities.
That's Gwen Burgess, historical costumer. Pictures of her outfits and information about her upcoming talk on historical women's sportswear are at herenow.org. And she is part of a huge community of people who make and wear this clothing.